For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Gamers Anonymous, the podcast about board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
Hey, and this is Anthony.
And this is episode 435, Last 10, BGG Game of the Year. We'd like to thank all our Patreon backers for helping us bring us a brand new episode. All right, friends, we are back and we are talking about the last 10. The last 10 years that BGG has been putting out Games of the Year. And in particular, BGA has been around for about 10 years now at this point. The time is getting there, Anthony.
Yeah, 10 years coming up in like 3 weeks.
Woo! So for this episode, we want to take a look back at the greatest games according to BGG. And they are great for a number of reasons. Anthony, throw us a reason. Why are BGG Game of the Year games so great?
So there's a lot of these Game of the Year awards. We've talked a lot about most of them in the last few months. And I think the thing about Board Game Geek is it's pretty indicative of what people are actually playing.
Sure.
I'm never surprised by the game that wins Game of the Year from Board Game Geek, maybe once or twice, but most of the time not, because it's people voting, right? So it's as a collective, what games do we think are best? And we tend to land on the games that are being played the most or doing the most interesting things in that year.
Sure.
So it's not like the Spiel des Jahres where we're talking about games that, you know, meet a bunch of very specific criteria in Germany, right?
Yes.
Country that's, you know, 8,000 miles away. We're talking about games that are getting played, that people are talking about, people are voting on and reviewing on Board Game Geek. So it's a very good indicative award. So looking back 10 years on these, we're really looking at some of the best games of the last 10 years, according to a specific audience, but a very big audience.
Absolutely. And again, the BG audience is typically our audience, or at least our level or our weight of gaming. Right. So, you know, we're big fans of the light stuff and some of the fun, kooky stuff, wacky stuff that's out there. Definitely the medium to heavy Euro. And then obviously we have our favorites as far as the super, super crunchy, heavy Euro stuff. And then every once in a while, there's an 18XX or a war game in there just for funsies.
Right. Funsies. You see, you said it. It's fun.
It's funsies.
Yeah.
It's one of those negative 1990s things. It's like it's like when you say something is bad, but it actually is good. So when you say something funsies, it's actually not fun. But I don't know. Maybe one day.
I choose not to hear the irony in your voice.
Well, look, it's a thing we do. We also do RPGs. That's a thing, too. We do those a lot. We don't talk about those because, I don't know, they're RPGs and they take forever.
That's true, yeah. We're certainly not able to review them, and we're not very good at them, but we do enjoy them. So
we do enjoy them, and we do, in theory, we are playing a lot of them at the same time, but the group has not reconvened yet. So
that's true. Yes.
Yes, we are part of a lot of campaigns and a lot of alternate universes. We are a lot of alternate characters that are just, you know, waiting and waiting and waiting for that one member to show back up again. But we have Will now, and Will is actively somehow been able to get his troop together on a more reliable basis. So we will bring Will back for more of the RPG stuff. But generally, board gaming, BGG stuff, perfect in line with everything that we're doing. Taking a look at the top 10s of, you know, the top game of the last 10 years. A lot of fun games you've heard of. The good stuff. The stuff that has lasted the test of time. The hotness that has never cooled off and always stayed hot. And more times than not, has hit the table. So we'll be talking about that on our future review. But Anthony, there are things happening in board gaming land.
Board gaming land? I want to go there. We kind of are, actually. We are kind of going to board gaming land.
We are kind of going there.
Gen Con, of course, we're talking about.
Yes.
This week. It's crazy. We're out of time. Are you packed yet?
No.
You ready?
No.
Not at all. Me neither.
No.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this right now on a Monday, a day early, it's because we are on a plane on Tuesday. And I cannot post this episode on Tuesday, so you're getting it a day early. So, yeah, we're going to be at Gen Con. We're going to be there Wednesday to Sunday. Got, obviously, Board Game Academics. We've been talking about this for months. We have our premiere event happening at Gen Con Trade Day on Wednesday, August 2nd. You can still participate, by the way, if you're interested. You can join us virtually. Go to BoardGameAcademics.com, register there. Tickets are still available. The Discord is up. Jen's doing an amazing job. There's a million things in there to look at and do. And all of our presenters will be in there as well, answering questions, engaging with the audience. But if you're going to be at Gen Con, so are we. So make sure you hunt us down and say hi.
Absolutely. And again, please join us at Trade Day if you're at Trade Day. If you're not at Trade Day, please check out Board Game Academics, because there is a great way to join us online, as Anthony was saying, with Jen. And we will all be there as well. And we are, of course, planning to put a lot of content out there about what's happening at Gen Con while we're at Gen Con. And that Discord is going to blow up with a lot of great Gen Con stuff. So we want you to be part of it, even if you're not part of it in person, be part of it online with us as we go through the experience together. So should be a lot of fun. Want you there one way or the other. And again, if you are going to be there physically, hit us up. If you're not going to be there but want to join us, hit us up. It's a great way through our Discord channel to be part of the fun that's happening at Gen Con 2023. So a lot of great stuff there. And again, we're excited. Now, Anthony, I thought about, typically in the past, we had done giant convention episodes. You know, Gen Con, we talk about the preview stuff and we, you know, we talk about some of the tips and tricks and things like this, because maybe for some people out there, it's their first Gen Con. And maybe there's like some information that they should know about going to any convention, and in particular Gen Con, maybe just like one or two quick tips or tricks, because I think that's helpful.
Gen Con tips and tricks.
Especially since the first time we went, it was nearly disastrous.
Oh my gosh. But it was so many memories.
It was so many memories.
We survived. It was great.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think the number one piece of advice I could give anybody is don't try to do everything, because Gen Con has like
everything,
10,000 events or something, plus the vendor hall. So pick like one or two things per day to schedule, and then just kind of like let the flow take you for the rest of the time. Because if you schedule a ton of stuff, one of two things is going to happen. You're going to burn out, which I've done, or you're going to not go to most of those things you scheduled, which I've also done, and you're going to feel bad about it or have wasted money on those tickets. But if you pick one or two, you'll probably go to them, and you have a whole bunch of other time to kind of explore and have fun.
Sure.
It's really hard not to get in that mindset of like, I have to get the most out of this because it's 4 days and I spent a lot of money to be here.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, we all do on any vacation, but this one in particular, because it's Gen Con. And some people only go once or twice in their lives because it's such a big event.
Yes.
They're like, I have to get the most out of this. And I think you'll have better memories and get more out of it if you don't try to do 400 things. If you just pick like six or seven really cool things and do those and remember them.
Sure.
that's, you know, it's easy for me to say that because I've done the opposite too many times, but
sure.
I think it helps. I think it definitely helps. Also, don't try to buy everything, because that's just, you get that post-capitalist depression. It's no fun.
Yes. Yeah, I, going back on your points too, if you should know, I would say the vast majority of the boots out there, places to purchase games, don't provide bags.
Right.
So be aware. Like, if you're going and you're going to buy things, buy bags or bring bags with you that are easy on the hands to carry. Or again, if you think you're bringing something with wheels, be very careful, because the rows and the area is packed. So it's a careful management system of like, I need to carry stuff. What's the best way to do it? I recommend backpacks, throw back to the old school, because initially you're like, cool, I'll get a shoulder bag, or I'll carry the bags with my hands. And like, you don't realize that you are there for hours and it's a lot of walking, and the games initially are not heavy, but eventually they will be. And outside is 1,000 degrees. So
hot. Yes. Yeah.
And
so hot.
And we have so many stories where we must have we've walked 20, 30 minutes to the car trying to get to the hotel, and like the bags become lead weights. So bring stuff that is super supportive and easy to carry and not going to take up a lot of space. And a personal thing, especially for the first con that I went to, I bought new sneakers. I wore them, broke them in. At least I thought I broke them in advance, because you know that you're going to be walking a lot. Everyone warns you about walking a lot, but like, bring the thing that is like legitimately broken in like years, because you're going to walk more than you've ever walked in your life if you've not been to Gen Con before.
Close to it. Yeah, for sure. Like, it's possible you go in and sit down and play games and don't get up too much, but that's not what we do. And that's not what most people do.
And you'll be like emotionally dragged down the aisles, because it is a
you want to see everything. Yeah. And to see everything, you have to be on your feet most of the time.
And some of that stuff, in fact, is in a football stadium that you have to walk to.
Which is super cool. That's another piece of advice that's more positive. Play a game in the football stadium. And I know it sounds silly, especially if you're not a sports fan, but there's something just undeniably amazing about sitting down on like the 50-yard line, playing a game, and occasionally looking up and seeing yourself or people around you on the Jumbotron.
Yes.
Playing board games.
100%.
Like, it's a memory that will stick with you forever. Like, it's silly. I know it's kind of goofy. It's very nerdy, but it's really, really cool. It's the one thing I remember the most from the last time I was at Gen Con in 2019 was doing that. And it was like playtesting someone's game. It wasn't even like a brand new release. Sure. It was just, and we were sitting around shooting the shit. It was so much fun. So definitely do that if you can.
Sure. And I would also say, plan out in advance where you want to eat, because there is a ton of people. Things get packed almost immediately, and it's good for you, no matter what your diet may be, to know where the places are that you're going, because it benefits you. Our favorite place has been, I think, every con, 3 Carrots in Fountain Square. But again, there are a lot of great places to eat at around the convention center or a little bit away. And again, you should know that in advance. Don't go to the convention and say, like, let's get lunch, because it's just like, everyone's getting lunch, and like, you need to know those things in advance, because it will take up a lot of time. Again, I think what Anthony said at the start was the best, right? Like, figure out what you want to do and do those things, because inevitably you can't do everything. And if you try to, on any level, try to do everything, or at least most of the things, it's going to break your heart, because you're going to miss out. So figure out what type of experiences are the type of experiences that you want to have, and focus on those, because again, inevitably you can't go to all the shows and events. Even Trade Day has so many great events at the same time. And you're like, well, which of the 6 of things do I want to go to? It's just like, you just can't. And then again, you could just go to the convention and spend every day in the vendor hall. Like, that is completely legit. There is so much to see. Like,
we have done that at least half the time we've been there. We did that.
Yeah. So take it slow and go up and down. Take it fast and just see everything. But just know who you are and what you like to do, and just do that thing. I think Will's coming with us this time, and he's definitely a different type of gamer than us. So I know he's playing a lot of like RPG live events. Yeah. Not my thing. I would do that if it wasn't Gen Con, but it's Gen Con. So for me, I want to go up and down every aisle. I want to see all the things. And I want to go to the football stadium, of course. And I want to do those things.
Oh, we're going to the football stadium. We are playing War of the Ring, the card game, what? In the football stadium.
We are.
There's a tournament. There's still tickets available. I don't know if they will be when you hear this, but it's going to be cool. I'm very excited for that.
Very cool. Yeah, no, it's fun. I mean, it's not as fun as alien life being proven, but, you know.
Yeah, but who cares, right?
I know, nobody cares. We don't care. Have you been outside these days?
The ocean is literally boiling in Florida. Who cares?
They're like, hey, there's aliens. Aren't you kind of freaked out? Or like, nah, economic crisis, global health crisis.
Are they causing all of this? No, we don't think so. Can they fix any of this? No, we don't think so. We don't care.
Recently on an episode, I welcomed our AI masters. I'm now welcoming our alien masters because, you know, look, it could be any worse than it currently is.
More than welcome. I'll roll out the red carpet. I'll make them dinner. Like, come on. Can you fix this, please?
I am a fan of sci-fi. I'm wagering it's better than what we got. I'm just going for it.
If they made it all the way here, then they must be doing something right, because
it's true. So a lot of fun stuff to come. Again, stick with us. We'll have more details, more information. We'll talk about more of the games as we see them. There'll be photos, there'll be information. We'll do a whole bunch of stuff. Again, thank you so much for joining us at the table at Gen Con. So yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet. Anthony, you're doing stuff on Patreon this week.
I am, yes. I'm a little behind on it, but I am coming out very soon this weekend, probably, with my first episode of the Top 100 Deep Dive. So I'm diving into my Top 100 games. I'm going to go through 5 to 10 at a time each week. I have the first part recorded. I'm going to do another one, too. So we'll release that sometime while we're at Gen Con. So just to keep things flowing. So if you're not on our Patreon, just know that we post an extra episode almost every week. Mm-hmm. So it's 4 per month. Some months have 5 weeks. We don't get one in that fifth week. But every 2 weeks, Chris, you're posting Kicking the Habit. Every 2 weeks, I'm posting whatever I feel like. So it's usually me talking about the games I own or have purchased. But it's fun. And it's a chance to kind of deep dive into something we don't have as much time to talk about here on this podcast.
Sure.
And it's extra content. And plus, if you are a backer, you can reach out and say, this was cool, do more of it. Yes. Or I don't know about this, and we will 100% listen to you, because that's why we're doing
it. So. Yeah, I've gotten a lot of requests on Kicking the Habit where I review, or I should say preview, all the Kickstarters, backer kits, game found stuff. I have a lot of people reaching out to me going, can you talk about this one or that one or this one? I'm not sure if I should back it or not. And we run through the campaigns. So it's not paid for. It's completely me and you who are talking about the stuff at the table. Not an official preview, not a paid preview. Just want to give you the best advice on purchasing the best games out there. All right, I think that's what's going on with us. What's going on with our listeners and our friends out there? What's our question of the week?
All right, question of the week this week. I asked everybody one of the hardest questions that we've all had to answer. So let's say you just got a game you're super excited about. How do you convince your friends to play it?
Oh,
yes. So
magic?
I think, yeah, right. I think we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, because you went to a game night for the first time in a long time and brought all your games and nobody wanted to play them.
Yeah.
And it's happened to all of us. So so I asked everybody how they handle it. And some of them, you know, they stack the deck a little bit. But Corey Murphy says, have it set up already when they show up for game night.
Ooh.
We don't have to play this one. I just wanted it to be ready for us in case we do.
Host
the game night usually will do it. I don't know why you brought games to my house. We're playing my games. So
that's right.
Jill Coleman says, solo mode? ? All ready to play. I'm convinced. No solo mode. Play two-handed if possible. No option on either. Figure out a way to make friends that want to play games with me. In practice, seriously though, usually get the game set up already and be ready to teach. So I think I'm kind of in Jill's boat a lot too, of I really want to play this. I don't know how long it's going to take to get to the table. I'm just going to set it up and play it by myself.
Okay.
To at least get something out of this thing I purchased. And then I will pester people after that.
So, yeah, no, I get that.
Charlie says, lie. Just lie. Tell them it's a short game, super thematic, and you'd already know all the rules.
There you go.
Yeah, Charlie, that'll do it.
I love that, Charlie. It's fantastic.
In all seriousness, though, it doesn't take much to convince my group to try something new. We like to play at least one familiar game and one new game each session.
Mm.
Or lie. We could just lie.
Yes.
Whiskey Punk says, just bring that game. If I win the roll, the die roll, we're playing it, or host a game night and have it already set up.
Gotcha.
I know a lot of game groups do this. Like, you roll dice, you take turns, you draw names. That helps.
One of the recent meetups that I had seen post, I haven't been there yet, but people post what game that they want to bring / play, and then people need to RSVP for that game. And then if they don't get enough people, then, you know, like, if it doesn't meet the player count, then that game is not played. And I thought that was really smart. And obviously the organizer says that, like, hey, you know, there'll still be spots, right? People drop out or whatever else it is, but at least there's that. I think that discussion in advance is helpful.
Yeah, for sure. And it's honestly, like, as somebody who does this all the time, bring stuff and people don't want to play it. I don't care, right? Because we all have games we all want to play. Yeah. I want everybody to be having fun.
Sure.
But I also don't want to bring something and learn it if I don't need to.
That's true.
So it's nice to know in advance if nobody's going to play what I brought. So.
Yeah. Especially when you bring a lot of games and you're like, I kind of learned all these games. They're in my head. They will evaporate from my head in about 15 minutes. So could we get one of these to the table, please? And yeah.
I know, like, when you and I get together, we usually have a conversation of, like, here are all the options. Which of these do we want to play? Because we need to learn the rules to all of them.
That's right.
So which ones are we going to take the time to do that with?
Yeah. And usually it's like, time is running short. What do you know? Like, what could you legitimately know and play, like, now?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Drew mentions sharing the hype. So plant the seeds in their minds weeks to months in advance. Share your excitement about a game preparation. Send out a video. Discuss future stories that may unfold. So just draw people into your obsession. Make them want to play it the way you want to play it.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Kickstarter, and obviously we've done that a lot for people. It's just like, hey, people are talking about this thing. You should play this thing. Or sometimes you bring a game to game night, and they're like, oh, is that a Kickstarter? And you're like, yeah, you know, 5 years ago, but yeah.
Right, yeah.
They're like, oh, that thing has hype behind it. I'm like, yes, it does. Let's just go along with that.
Let's play it now.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So thanks, everybody. Our winner this week, who I will be contacting, is Charlie, because what's better than a lie, right? Just get people in there. Then they'll like it. You know they're going to like it. It's fine.
Nobody said listen to our podcast, though. I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah. Come on, all. Just pander. You'll win a game.
It's literally our only job is to get more people at the table. So, sure. We should make an episode which is just, like, literally taking suggestions from people of, like, hey, I want to play this game at game night, but I'm not sure if they'll play it. Like, we'll do a whole podcast. We'll be like, you know what the greatest game is? It's that game. It's Charlie's game. Charlie's game that he's bringing to game night's the greatest game. I want you to play that game.
Yeah, it's the $500 Patreon level. That's we will right. convince your friends to play your game.
Listen, Mike. Come on, Mike. You know Charlie's always, like, the coolest guy out there. And, like, he always knows the best games. So why not sit down and play the game? You want to be as cool as Charlie? Come on, Mike. Do it. All the cool kids are doing it, man. We're doing it. We're big, big, famous podcasters. You know, we're down with Charlie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll get that level up there real soon. All right, everyone. So again, hit us up always on all of our social media. Again, you can find us wherever it is. And if you do have a second, we would love to get a review from you on any of your podcast players. It means a lot. It helps a lot. And again, thanks for shouting us out. All right, Anthony, that's everything that's happening out with our friends out there. Let's talk about things we want to get to the table. Let's talk about our acquisition disorders.
All right, so I'm going, like, full solo mode this week, because next week I'm actually going to engage with other human beings, so I got to get all of the loneliness out of my blood now, because I'm about to get on an airplane and host an event and go to a dinner and go to a convention. It's going to be exhausting, so solo.
Anthony, every time at the convention, Anthony's at some point, he just has a point in the day, he's like, you know what, just done with people for the rest of the day, I'm going to go back to the hotel, I'm done. I'm just done, because it is a lot.
I'm just going to go sit down. I'm going to read a book. Just can't do this anymore. You're like, it's only 8:30. I'm like, yeah, it's pretty late. All right. So first up then, because the reviews will come later, this is a preview of Unreliable Wizard. It is a game out of Japan, designed by Kamibayashi. And it's, I don't know if it was self-published or just like only in Japan. I think it was only in Japan, like a low print run. Mm-hmm. That came out in 2022. So in it, you're an apprentice wizard tasked by the king with destroying the demon lord and saving the princess. The game is designed to look very much like an old 8-bit style RPG type thing, right? There's only 32 cards in the deck. You move your wizard along, kind of there's like a map that builds out with the cards. You're paying life points, crossing terrain. There's battles you face with different minions on different pieces of landscape. And at the end, you have to fight the demon king to win, right? So kind of a fantasy video game-esque theme that honestly, I don't think it had much buzz. I think the people who had seen it and played it were like, this is kind of cute and fun and clever. But it's coming to GameFound pretty soon. There's a new version of it from Salt and Pepper. And there's already like 3,000 or so people backing, or not backing it, following it. Mm-hmm. Looking forward to it, myself among them. Ooh. And so we've got new graphic design, it looks like. And not really 100% sure what else they have in there. But this is from the company that recently brought us Resist and Witchcraft. Sure. Which I know, Chris, you talked about not too long ago.
Yes.
Kind of solo only experiences. So it looks cool. And I like the theming of it. I like the sound of it. I don't know anything else beyond that, but I did back Witchcraft. And if I see a copy of Resist Ooh. Somewhere, I will track it down.
Yeah, same here.
So looking forward to Unreliable Wizard when they post that.
I really sincerely appreciate when I think we've talked about this a while back, right? Where I think it was the awards. It might have been, I don't know if it was the BGG awards or it was one of the other awards, like the solo game winner or the solo game nominees, right? Like games that are just like built to be solo is an impressive feat. And if they like, if they nail the design, like it's something above and beyond, right? I appreciate that. Like, you can play a lot of games solo. A lot of co-op games you can play solo. Like, these are great. Like, I really like the fact that it's this whole genre of games, solo games, are just like, now it's just a thing, right? Now it's just, of course, solo games.
Yeah, it's like, back in the day, there was like three.
Yeah.
Right? There was Friday and Hostage Negotiator and maybe one more I'm not thinking of that you could readily find. There was a bunch of like print and play stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like Solitaire's been around for 150 years, and there's versions of that. But if you were just getting into solo games like 10 years ago, there really weren't that many things you could buy at the game store. Now there's a ton of things. I'm going to talk about three of them, you know, when we get to At the Table in a minute. And then you've got like companies like this that all they're doing is releasing those. There's big ones like the Dark Knight Returns game. That's a solo only game. It's a big like $80 sprawling experience. It's just for one player.
Mm.
So it's cool. Like, I love playing with people, but sometimes I can't. So it's nice to play a game that's just designed for me.
Yes.
To play by myself.
Yeah. No, I really, again, as someone who historically has not liked solo games, these things really pique my interest a lot because it's built for that. It's not an afterthought. Like, it's built this way. And it's great. All right. Well, I've surprisingly, over time, has become a big fan of Sinister Fish Games. And recently, they posted a new Kickstarter. It's Wizards and Co. Raid Dungeons for Loot in a Ruthless Contest with Other Greedy Wizards. From the designer of Alma Mater, and I think these are all Anthony's favorite game people, Lorenzo Magnifico and Grandiosity Hotel. Have you seen the lineup of designers who were designing this game, Anthony?
I didn't even know this game existed until you put it on the spreadsheet.
Can you look at it? Because I think, look at the designers. I think that's
yeah, that's yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, yeah. Virginia Gili, Flaminia Brissini, Stefano Luperto. That's
and even art
by
Miguel
Coimbra on top of it. Yeah, like this is great.
This is like Murderer's Row, and I was just like flipping through this. I'm like, oh, Sinister's Fish. Like they're Euro light and heavy games I've liked a lot. I think they had this other super light game, which was just not for me. I'm like, oh, cool, another game. And I was like, oh, who's doing this game? Just like, oh, yeah, this is going to be a thing. Now, this is the weird thing, Anthony, because, again, we talked about the games and the designers, and people know these people, so it's no surprise here. what's a little surprising is this is a very light game.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm looking at this 30 minutes. It's got like a little rondella cards. It looks almost like the treasure hunter game. It's like the real time thing. Like,
it's a little, and it's so like I said, I'm reading through this. I'm reading the designers. I'm reading the great price and the discount price from the retail. I'm looking at the artwork. I like it. And then I'm like, all right, so as you said, like when you look at the initial picture, you're like, what is it? Well, basically, like you said, there is this, I guess what we're, this octagon of a dungeon center. And what you are doing as a wizard is you're deploying creatures. You all have the same set of initial creatures. And as you draw cards, which are, you know, shuffled, you decide what creatures you're going to put into your dungeon. Once you deploy your creatures, one or two dungeon, you know, creatures that you put in there, later on, you'll be able to draw more. But you place them in there, you consider the enhancements. So the enhancements in the middle of the board flip over, so it's a global effect, and it's going to, you know, change the game slightly, right? So, like, I guess like Marvel Snap, right? Like, this area is now bonus to this, or a weakness to this, or you gain an additional thing. And then, in clockwise order, the creatures are going to resolve. You'll flip them over and they'll resolve. And typically the creatures are knocking out the other creatures, or they have a special ability or whatever they might have. After that mayhem happens, whoever has the two highest creatures, the first one gets the biggest loot, and then the second creature gets whatever is left over there. And you do that until a certain number of rounds, and then the game comes to an end. So I was like, oh, okay. Okay, like it's fine. It's again, I think this is their lighter series of, I won't even say it's a gateway game. I guess it's a gateway game. It's a gateway game in a way that of another game I'm going to talk about at my table. But considering that the price of this game is relatively inexpensive, it's $31 US, and the design pedigree and the art here, it might be worth picking up. $31 is not bad, but it is a lighter game for sure.
Yeah, I'll keep my eye on it. I don't know. Like,
it is a very
light game. I like the pedigree.
Right? Yeah.
It's tough, right? Like, Antoine Bauza makes light games like this all the time, and I don't like most of them. So, it doesn't, like, designer alone does not make a good game.
No.
Or, like, that's not the good way to say that. Designer alone does not make a game that's good for me.
Sure. And again, Sinister Fish, like, typically has written that line. Like, Moon is coming out, is probably going to be their crunchiest, heaviest game, which is still not going to be a heavy game.
No.
Villagers is, I feel like, is their, well, we'll see. I guess we'll see once Moon comes out. Villagers is their heaviest game at the moment. Streets is much lighter. And then, you know, it's been like that. I think this is just like a light game, fun game with the family and kids. If you're interested, again, great artwork, great designers, great company, great price. It's on Kickstarter now, Wizards & Co.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, Anthony, that's the things that we want to eventually get to the table at some point. Let's talk about the games that did hit the table. We'll let people know if those games are a buy and they should run out and pick those games up. If those games are a play and they should hit the table. If those games are a dodge and they should avoid them. Or if, in fact, those games are the dreaded burn. And let's be honest, the words, you know, just leave it outside and the sun will take care of it at this point. You don't have to do much to burn a thing these days. Come on.
Just go down to Florida. You can boil it in the ocean.
That's right. So what do you have up for us this week, Anthony?
All right, I got three games, and I'm going to rapid-fire them. Ooh. Rapid-fire.
All right, go!
So, there was a Kickstarter from Button Shy. They do this every month. They have a new Kickstarter. But there was two games that came out at once from designer Stephen Aramini. Now, Stephen Aramini has done several games in the past, most notably Sprawlopolis.
Oh. So,
this is, like, the big solo gaming guy. Not the only gaming guy, and he did make Sprawlopolis with Danny DeVine and Paul Kluka. So, but he worked on it, which is one of my favorite games of all time. It is still the best Button Shy game. That's not really a spoiler for these reviews, sure, because it's such a good game. But he made these two by himself, River Wild and Ancient Realms. So if you're not familiar with Button Shy games, it is a little plastic wallet that comes with 18 cards, and you play the game with the 18 cards. They almost always come with one or two expansions as well, which means it's more than 18 cards, but the base game is always 18 cards. Not all of them are solo. There's a lot of Button Shy games that play multiplayer. Sprawlopolis and Agropolis and Naturopolis now have, like, you can play up to four people, but the core of that game is solo. These two are solo only. They don't have two-player rules in them. I'm sure they'll have variants at some point. And like a lot of recent Button Shy solo games, they kind of feel like it, right? I have a bunch of these, and some of them are good and some of them are not. The most recent was the Numbsters, which was fine, but it was very short and a little luck-based, so it's not one I'm going to be playing over and over again, not like Sprawlopolis. Mm-hmm. I think these two are kind of in between that. So River Wild first. You have a deck of cards, you flip them over, and on the card you have several different things. You have the river itself, which is pink water for some reason. You have mountains, and you have different pieces of land. You're trying to form islands by putting the cards together, and you're going to build them out in kind of a growing, like, pyramid, inverse pyramid. And you try to form the islands because the islands are where you're going to score points. So on the island, you're going to have different animal symbols. You're trying to get different combos of animal symbols matching the requirement of the symbols. It's kind of fiddly in the scoring, which for an 18-card solo game that takes 15 minutes is not ideal. It took me a few plays of this to kind of fully understand what I was trying to do. And then once I got there, it was a little random, like, what I was able to accomplish. So it didn't really give me that brain-burning feeling where when I really click with it in Sprawlopolis, like, man, I'm a genius. Look what I did. It was just like, oh, yeah, that works. Okay. It's fine, right? It's a light... I don't even know if it's a light play. It's dodge-ish almost compared to, like, the other stuff that has come out from Button Shy. These games are so inexpensive that I'm always wary to say, like, oh, it's a dodge. Don't even look at this game. But it's a solo game, so if you're playing it, you're playing it. It's not like somebody dragged you to the table and I'm saying don't run away.
It's very Fight Club-ish.
So I guess, yeah, right. So I guess it is a dodge, right? Because yeah. I'm saying, like, maybe don't play this if you don't need to, and you don't need to because you're playing it by yourself. So there's a cool idea here. I don't think it quite comes together. Ancient Realm is the other one. They both ship together. And this one's a little more interesting. I like this one a little bit more. It's a civilization-themed puzzle game. So you have four cards in front of you that represent the different types of resources that you have. So there's coins and stone and food and wood, as we're all used to in any Civ game. Every card has, like, multiple columns in it that mm-hmm. represents different actions. And you place them down in front of you in the row. And there are, like, event cards that will be active when they're face up. There's also wonder cards that you're trying to build. And you can cover up, you're building out a row, it always has to be in a row, but you can cover up anything on any card, any combination of those different columns that isn't a wonder. You can't cover up the wonders. When you cover something up, things happen. You get income, you get actions, you get resources, but you also sometimes cover up victory points. So you're trying to balance it out where you're getting enough resources to be able to do more stuff, to build your wonders. The wonders have a lot of the victory point scoring conditions on them, and also working with the events that are active as they're active, and you can choose which deck you're flipping cards from. This game I found a lot more interesting, a lot more fulfilling in terms of what I was doing, a lot more, like, it evolves over the course of play in ways that River Wild really didn't. It was kind of a one-note game. I love Civ games anyways, and I think, like, finding a way to make a Civ game out of 18 cards that plays in 15 minutes was very, very impressive. This one for me is a buy. I really like this a lot. I've played this several times now. It's weighty, right? It has that feeling like Sprawlopolis gives where you're like, okay, I really have to think about each card that I play and where I'm going to put it and what I'm going to do with it. And then even after you've done that, you're like, well, I could have done that and that and that, and then this would have done that. It's still not, like, to that upper echelon of, like, Sprawlopolis, like, a top 50 game for me, but it's very good, and I'll keep playing it. So, that's Ancient Realm. So we got two in the same Kickstarter. One's great, one was not so great. The third game I want to talk about real briefly is For Northwood, a solo trick-taking game, which was my acquisition disorder like 3 weeks ago. This is a, as the game says, a solo trick-taking game. It re-implements The Emissary, which was like a, not even print and play, because it was like a set of rules for a deck of normal cards. In this, though, they've added artwork, and they've like built out this whole kind of world that you're working within. And it's won several awards, right? Like working with a set number of cards. It's not 18 cards, it's 54. So there's a lot more cards in the deck here, doing a lot more shuffling, but it's a lot more interesting as well. So what you're trying to do is on your turn, you're going to have these different, you have a row in front of you from 0 to 7, and you need to get the number of tricks with the hand that you have, matching each of those numbers, as many of them as possible. So you're going to choose where to put the arrow, and you're going to try to get that many tricks on your hand. You're also going to have a row in front of you of different special abilities that allow you to kind of mess with the game a little bit. Otherwise, it's basic trick-taking rules. So out of the 8 hands that you're going to play, you want to get as many of them as possible to match the number that you're at. Some of them are easier than others, right? Like a 4, you can kind of manipulate your way around a 4. A 0 is pretty hard in any trick-taking game, right? You have to not win any tricks. And so that creates a really interesting kind of flow. Every time you're playing the card, you have to be careful that, okay, when is this going out? How is this going out? Do I want to win this trick, or do I want to wait and maybe kind of catch the next one? What is the trump depends on which thing you point the arrow at any point in time. So it changes throughout the game based on which number you're going for. And the number you're going for changes because you're placing those the royal suits above the numbers at the start of every game. So it is kind of random as well. So this I found very clever and interesting. It's a little long for a solo only game. I felt like it took me a good 30, upwards of 40 minutes thinking it through. Because you're playing a full 8 hands. So it's a little bit longer than like a Button Shy game. But when I want a heavier, not heavier, but longer, I guess, more engaging experience, this was really, really clever. And it's when you see it in action, you're like, oh, why did nobody think of this before? But at the same time, you're like, wow, it's also really complicated. How did he think of it? So For Northwood, also going to give this one a buy. It's only $15. You could pick it up on Amazon. And it's a very solid solo only game. If you like trick taking and you want to play a game solo, this is, you know, this is it. So highly recommended. Or you could go to The Emissary on Board Game Geek, grab a deck of playing cards, and do it on your own without buying it at all.
So. Even better.
Yep.
Excellent. All right. Well, after our discussions about the Kennerspiel, I was like, I kind of somewhat owe it to myself and to everybody else to actually play the winner of the Kennerspiel. And I did. Challengers. Challenge accepted? Challenge succeeded? I don't know. Challengers, but an exclamation point, because it's important to point those things out, because weirdly enough, if you actually try to get this, you know, find this game online, you type in challengers, you're going to find like literally everything, right? Everything that's like, hey, board game challengers, and you're just getting people wanting to play board games, and that doesn't really help you long term. So I got this game to the table, got this game online. Again, you could play this on Board Game Arena, and that's always fun because it's typically free. That's always a benefit to everyone involved. And I have things to say about it. And I don't know necessarily where to begin, because it is certainly one of those games where, I don't know, I don't want to do the pun and say it's challenging, but it really is challenging, because this game won the Kennerspiel, and it's just like, okay, so let's talk about the game, and then I'll get to emotions, because there's a lot of emotions falling around. Challengers is an interactive deck building game for 1 to 8 players. So right there, it's amazing, right? It kind of fits in that, you know, sonar game where you get to play with so many players that you've never played with before, and it gets a lot of games to the table. So you get to play with one. It has a solo challenge, which is excellent, and it also plays up to 8 players. Now, typically, anytime we talk about the number five or beyond, Anthony head blows up. But this actually has a really meaningful rationale in the game. Because basically what you're simulating on some level, or actually playing, depending on how you look at it, is you're playing a tournament. And Challengers is supposed to be tournament play. It's supposed to give you that sense of like, almost like playing a CCG, and you win or lose, and you go on to the next round regardless, and you win or lose, and you go next round, and you're gaining points as you go based upon the round. So the first round, 1 point, and so forth and so on. Then you get to the final round. Now, if you play to one or two players, that's a whole different game scoring mechanism. But if you play 3 to 8, you are trying to be in the top two, because when it comes to the top two, the winner takes the game. Now, let's talk about what actually the game is. So, a lot of people, and rightfully so, when you look at this game, you're like, it's a deck-building game, because it legitimately has every round a deck phase, in which everyone at the start of the game gets a identical deck, and then has an opportunity to draw cards to make another kind of like drafting situation, just unique to you, mixed up of all of these different types of, I guess, classes of cards that are out there. So again, depending on what you play and how you play it, there's a lot of opportunities to play with a lot of these different wacky. It's very cartoony. So there's castle cards with like very medieval characters, and then there's city cards with people from the city, and there's film studio cards, which are all actors and such. There's Funfair, which is all carnival kind of stuff. Haunted House, which is little creatures and haunted kind of stuff. Outer space, aliens, and things like that. And then, of course, Shipwreck, because why not? There should be some Shipwreck stuff in there, too. So you get the starters, and then the other decks, depending on how you play, the other decks are mashed up, and then you draw the cards. And then depending on that particular round, you get to select 1 to 2 cards to add to your deck. Doesn't seem like a big thing, but it does make a big difference. Now, this is where the game takes a change. So as the game goes on, and as you're drafting each round, you'll have sometimes an opportunity to draft one card from a lower level power deck, two cards from a lower power deck, or one card from a higher power deck. So there's a starter card, then there's ABC, and then there's robots, which is a whole separate thing in solo. So A, B, and C. So the power goes from 1 to 3, and then it goes, you know, up to 5 to 7, and so forth into 10. So bigger cards are better, right? Here's the thing. You can put as many cards as you want in your deck, but as you play cards, the unique cards goes to, and you're playing on this quasi field, like it's a playmat. You have slots. So as you play a card, you're playing cards because you're trying to play a capture the flag kind of situation. So there's a flag token. So there's a flag. You play a card, no matter what number it is, you get the flag. So if it's a 1, congratulations, you got a 1. Your opponent plays a card, and again, they get a 1, it matches up, they still get the flag. Now, you have your card, it's got to go to the deck. The deck is 1 of 6 spaces on your side of the playmat, and it just takes up a set. This continues. Now, you need to get equal or higher to get the flag card, little flag token, to show that you're in charge, and whoever at the end of the round has the flag token wins, with the exception, of course, of if your 6 slots are taken up and then you have another unique card and it's being discarded, then you kind of like, it's a press your luck game is what I'm saying. So you can put as many cards as you want, but the more unique cards, if you go over 6 unique cards, if you have 7 unique cards, you will eventually bust if that 7th unique card comes out before the game comes to an end. But it may be advantageous for you to do so because you want to put some of the bigger cards into your hand but don't want to get rid of the weaker cards. So it is possible that your big cards holds on to the flag because the other opponent is not able to match you or go beyond you, so you win the game and they burn out their deck. So, game comes to an end. If one of the sides is either out of cards or they bust because their, you know, their deck is full of unique cards, and then there's no place for that seventh unique card. Now, the game allows you, there's a lot of duplicate cards in the game, so you could have multiple copies of the same card, and it doesn't take up additional deck spots. They all kind of slide in there. And you will need additional cards because several of the cards in the game have benefits and bonuses that will benefit other cards in the game. So I would say, depending on the deck that you play, some cards will boost other cards, typically of the same type. So having more of that particular card's beneficial. And a lot of times those cards will only boost up your cards if they're part of your deck. So the player is essential to get the flag, but as you're discarding cards, not to worry, because several of them have bonuses. And in fact, throughout the game, there are certain cards that will allow you to select cards out of your deck or rearrange your deck. Sounds fine. Here's again where it's more of a press your luck game than it is a deck building game. You do not choose any of the cards in your deck to, like, once you build your deck, it's done. The deck plays by itself. There is no choices to play. Whatever comes off the top of your deck automatically gets played. Whatever comes off the top of their deck gets automatically played. And a number of cards will play. So if you put out five and one of their card comes as one, it will keep playing cards until it's equal or above. So in a game of challengers, you do a little minor deck maintenance as far as like putting cards in, and you also have an option to remove certain cards because, again, you don't want to go over. Well, you can. You can press your luck whether or not you want to go over. But throughout the game, it's like one or two cards in, and then the deck plays itself. One or two cards in, the deck plays itself. And again, if you keep it to six, you don't have to worry about busting, but you may not have enough of the powerful cards or enough of different cards to actually benefit you long term. So, simplistic, simple 1.80 on Board Game Geek as far as weight is concerned. Deck building game, but really what it feels like is a press your luck game because you're trying to modify your starting deck with cards that are going to benefit you. And again, because there's different classes of cards that typically will do certain things, do you go for a certain class of cards, right? Do you go space? Oh, I got a space number two. Do I discard everything else and just keep my space things in there? Because maybe I'll get a good space card that will benefit the other cards. Or am I trying to do film studio? Because obviously they have a lot of cards that benefit each other. Or am I just putting a lot of big cards in there? Or am I slotting in a lot of identical cards so it makes my deck higher and I can play longer, but inevitably they're low cards? Like, again, there's a lot of things to think about. And certainly there are cards in the game that will clear out a couple of cards in your deck. So you could play legitimately 7, 8, or 9 unique cards, but you have cards that move cards out of your deck and put into a discard pile. So the deck building is so slight. And the risk management is really what you're playing because, again, the deck plays itself beyond a few times where you could possibly adjust your cards. All of that said, it is weirdly enough, even though it's more of a game experience than a game, and even though the play part plays itself, it's kind of fun. I'm embarrassed to say this. Like, there is something just like, I get to do a little minor thing with my deck, and I get to do a little minor thing in the game period, and it plays itself. Like, you can legitimately hate this game and be 100% right. You can legitimately love this game and also be 100% right. I don't know who that is, but it's fine. I give it a play. If you see it at a convention, play it. I don't recommend buying it because it's so much lighter than you can imagine. And the deck building and the risk management and the pressure of your luck is so light. But it also plays 8 players. I don't know what to do with this game. It would be great at a convention or a game night if you just want to play with people who've never played games before. They could get the subtle concept of like one or two cards in, game plays itself. Because again, you're playing war. If you ever played war as a kid, it's a deck of cards. And you just play cards until, like, I win because I'm higher. You win because you're right. That's pretty much it in a nutshell. So this game could be a dodge. It could be a play. I don't see it as a buy. And I hate to say it, but like, I really don't see it as a burn. I don't think it does anything fundamentally bad. I think it's just a weirdly light game that kind of plays itself. And you have some level of, you know, like some level of, I don't know, control, but it's so slight. So challengers, it's a play. And I'm just going to say that, move on.
I'm not surprised. I feel like a lot of the Kennerspiel winners end up being that for us, at least.
Yeah.
Like, we're like, oh, that doesn't seem like that'll be fun. You play it and you're like, oh, it is kind of fun. And I don't know how or why, but
yes.
I guess I'll just move on. I'm not going to actively bring this out.
No.
Because that's not my kind of game. But if someone said, let's play this, I'd be like, sure.
You'd be like, all right. Just like, and again, it's weird. I don't know. Like, it's weird.
It is weird. You're right.
it's a very weird game. And again, I think this game does have a role as far as like non-gamers or even a party situation. Like, again, there's very few what I would consider, again, in my humble opinion, like board games that you bring to a game night and you could play with non-gamers. So it's usually a party game, which is usually like, Chris really likes this color. What do you all think? Like, it's those games just drive me nuts. I want to play an actual game. This is almost an actual game that, and again, you could play with up to 8 people. So I played at different player counts, play solo, which is fine. Don't purchase this game for the solo. Purchase this game because you have times where there are 8 people or a game night or a meetup and you want something to start the night. And it plays incredibly fast. So, challengers! ! It's a thing. It's fine. I don't know what else to say about it. It's a press your luck game, not a deck builder. If you think it's a deck builder, you're going to be disappointed. But it's also a deck builder, kind of. So, yay, I guess. So, I don't know. I've won some 8-player tournaments, and that was the thing that happened. And I was like, I don't know. Just like, random deck play. I'm going to stop awesome. Now because it just doesn't get any better.
No, it's okay, man. You're allowed to like it. It's all good.
Don't know what it is. It's just like, it's just barely fine. It's fine. It's fine. Fine. Don't
just barely.
It's fine. Again, you know, I'm going to get like a box quote. Chris from Board Gamers Anonymous says, it's fine.
Yeah. Right underneath the Kennerspiel.
That's right. It's going to be, it's going to be above the Kennerspiel.
Right. Chris said it? Kennerspiel is young.
Chris said it? Wait a minute. Oh, it must be fine. It's a family party game. Enjoy it for that. All right. That being said, let's get on to our feature review. Our feature review this week, hopefully I don't fall down after this review. Our feature review this week is our last 10. The last 10 years of Board Gamers Anonymous, looking at the greatest 10 years in gaming. And in particular, for this week's episode, we're looking at Board Game Geek's Game of the Year. As we talked about before, and over the last several months, it seems like at this point, there's been so many awards. And again, they deserve it because board games are the best. We all agree. That's why we're listening. But we want to talk about the last 10 years. Again, Board Game Geek, since we all do vote on it as a community. And again, if you're interested, Board Gamers Anonymous actually has a guild, right? We have a thing on BGG, right? All the podcasts are up there. There's information about us up there. So, yeah, that's a thing. So, again, you can like us there. You can even get, like, one of the little micro badges. There's micro badges for BGG, BGA. Do you know that?
That is true. But you can get those.
Yes. All right. So, do all those things because it's fun. Now being said, Anthony, the last 10 years of gaming, you've played these games, right?
Yep, I played all these games.
All right. So, again, let's do an honorable mention for the years that became before BGA, just because it's fun. Back in 2006, Kalis, the really hard slap your friend in the face kind of Euro game. So if you've ever had a Euro game night and people are like, hey, Euro games don't have interaction, play Kalis because it punches people in the face. Like, it really is when I'm games. 2007, Shogun. I mean, I don't know. Like,
more punching in the face.
It's a lot of punching. Like, early on, there was a lot of punching in the face in Eurogames. So Shogun was the cube tower, was known for it, a lot of that kind of stuff. 2008, Anthony, more punching in the face. Like, hey, you got a family. You also have to, like, just feed them or otherwise. Like,
But this is more the game punching you in the face, which is more what Euros have become.
It's like, true. It's true.
Y'all sit in a circle playing roughly the same game, occasionally getting mildly annoyed at somebody, but mostly you're pissed at the game.
Yes. You get to have a nice existential crisis about your family members starving each and every round.
Yeah. Fun.
You're like, I want to make profit, but also I have to feed my child who's working the field. So, yeah, that's a thing. 2009, Anthony. Again, arguably the greatest deck building game of all time, Dominion came out, and that was revolutionary at the time.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
2010, the driest of the dry Euros, Hanzo Teutonica.
This is a weird one, because I mean, it's pre me getting into the hobby, so you know, maybe I just didn't know what the space was like back then. But I'm like, really, Hanzo? This is like, I have this game, I like it fine, but it does not strike me as a game that was like earth shattering for the entire hobby over the course of a year. Was it like a dry year, or just this game really hit hard for people? I don't know.
Well, it also won the best strategy game that year. So, I mean, Innovation was out, and I think Innovation is a much more radical game. I should also mention to you, Anthony, I'm hoping you're sitting down, because you know what came out that year too? The best thematic board game, War of the Ring Collector's Edition, came out that year.
Somehow, oh, man.
Somehow it was not the game of the year. Maybe because it previously released. I don't know. But, yeah.
Yeah.
So if someone says Euros are dry and boring, it's because of this. But there's also punching in that game, too. Because you have to work off people. I've never loved this game. But, like, again, it has such a gravity to it that I do own a copy of it. It's sealed, but I own a copy. Legally, I have to.
Same. Yeah, mine is open, but it was used when I bought it, and I have not played it.
Nice.
Which is not an indictment.
No, people love the game. I don't think it's a bad game. It's just one of the least thematic games of all time. There's nothing, there's no theme to it. Like, again, there's not even pasted on, but whatever.
Yeah.
2011, again, I think about one of the quintessential board games of all time. It's so much so it's made fun of. It's the constant go-to joke. It's the Cones of Dunshire. Dominant Species, 2011. Makes a lot of sense as game of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a big one.
2012, Eclipse.
So crazy. Such a good game at the time, but now that we have, like,
several versions of TI.
Whatever, for the galaxy. It's like, yeah, no, that game was good, but man, it's so much better now.
Yes. 2013, and again, this is where we're getting into things, Anthony. 2013, BGA is out. Board Game is Anonymous is hitting the ground running. The game of the year, Terra Mystica.
So this is the first game, and I know you don't like this as much as I do.
Uh-huh.
This is a very good game for me, but this is the first game that I sat down to play, and I played it two player, which is not a great way to play Terra Mystica. But I sat down to play this at Myriad. And this is the first heavy Euro game, like above a three, where I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Like, my brain hurts. I've been sitting down for 3.5 hours and I want to do it again. I was so, like, to the point that my opponent was like, are you all right? I'm like, I'm so happy.
Aww.
Right now. That was the moment where I'm like, I love board games. I don't just like them. This is amazing. Now, it's not my favorite heavy Euro. There's a lot of other games that have come out since, or that I've discovered since, that I like more.
Uh-huh.
But this is the one that made me realize it.
Yes.
So it has a very special place in my heart. I still own my copy with all the expansions. I like Gaia Project better, but it's an amazing game for what it is, as broken as it is in so many ways.
Sure.
But I'm really glad it exists, because I think if it didn't, I maybe wouldn't have discovered how amazing the big, heavy, overwhelmingly complex games can be.
True. This was always the game, and I remember playing this, and I've played it several times. This is the game I always wanted to love. I like it. I've played it a lot. Like, in fact, like, I love the idea of terraforming, you know, the land in this kind of fantasy theme. I love the artwork. It just, And I can't really explain it. It just never fully landed with me. And again, I played it several times. Yeah. I went over to a game night at a friend's house, and all she had just, it was Terra Mystica day. And I was just like, and again, because it is that crunchy that it does hurt a little bit when you play it. And I played it three times at that game night. And I was just like, but why? I want to love this. I want to. And I guess, again, since it was the winner and it has been the hotness and it has, I guess, spawned the Gaia Project and Terra Nova and the new, I guess, the next edition, right? Capstone Games is coming out with a new
Age of Innovation.
Yeah, which is Terra Mystica, but instead of having like an innate power, you get to pick one or two powers to kind of like put on your board yourself. So you get to create your own power. I'm really excited about that because I really want to love this game. There's just something about it that just doesn't click with me. So maybe that new Age of Innovation is going to do it for me. So I'm really excited about that. Anthony, 2014, we went the other way for a second.
This is like the only one. It's such a weird outlier.
Why? And again, this was the same year that Five Tribes came out. So I don't understand. And Abyss came out that same year. And Dead of Winter came out that same year, and they went with... They went with...
Yeah, Splendor.
Splendor, folks.
Splendor. What? Because it's not like there weren't big games. We talked about this with the Spiel des Jahres. Like, Codenames comes out the next year. It doesn't win.
Yes.
Right? Like, what is the... I mean, fine. Splendor has a huge cultural impact. Azul never wins this award. Why Splendor? And why did Splendor pull it off?
And again, let me blow your mind a little bit, because again, we're in board gaming now, 2014, and we're at the conventions, we're doing things. Anthony, you know what else came out that year? Imperial Settlers.
Ah, that's a better game.
Patchwork.
Now, I guess with the expansion.
Patchwork came out that year.
That's a better game. Oof. A better game.
Again, I own this digitally. I've never bought it physically. I've thought about it several times. It's just never been my game. I don't know.
We've been over it 100 times. Yeah. It plays itself, which is perfect as a gateway game.
Yeah.
A game that plays itself is perfect.
Yes. But yes.
For Board Game Geek, it was always like, really? We like this that much? Okay.
And again,
am I out of touch?
I don't know.
Maybe I'm out of touch.
Star Realms came out that year too. Star Realms is great. I love Star Abyss. I love Abyss. Like everything else I love. Yes, that again, go back to that episode, whenever it was in 2014, and listen to more of our, you know, wailing.
Oh, our meltdown, because we were really excited about this game, too. We were like, oh my gosh, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Everybody's so excited about it, and we played it, and we're like, did we play this wrong?
Yeah.
I think we played it wrong.
There's something wrong with us. Splendor's been around forever, multiple iterations, it's not going anywhere. I mean, they made a Marvel version of it. Once you make a Marvel version of anything, it's there forever. So, yeah.
Sure.
And again, another big swing, but it definitely within our ballpark area, Anthony. 2015, Pandemic Legacy Season 1.
This was a no-brainer, I think, at the time, because anybody who played this game, it was immediately their top experience of all time.
Yeah.
It was for me, like, for a while. I was like, this is the best thing I've ever done in gaming.
Yeah.
Is it the best game? No, but that's a whole separate argument. So we're talking about the best game of the year, the best experience of the year. Now, there was some other stuff that I got to later that I wish had gotten more attention that year. Time Stories came out a month after this,
yeah,
or maybe even the same month. And I really wish more people had a chance to play that and see it, because I thought Time Stories as an engine and what it did and some of the modules that came with that was so much more interesting than the one season of Pandemic Legacy. Mm. No matter how groundbreaking Pandemic Legacy was. Also, looking back on it from 8 years later, I don't know that Pandemic Legacy's legacy, pardon the pun, is as great as we thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Like, we thought every game was going to be legacy for the rest of time. No one can do it. They're all bad. Right? Not all, but most of them are bad. Yeah. Like, the other two Pandemic Legacies are good, and there's a couple other oddball things in. But most of the ones, just not great. So, maybe we're projecting a little bit on this one, being like, oh, this is the second coming of board games. This is what games are for the next 10 years. And it wasn't. It's not what games are now. It's not what they were for the next 10 years.
Nobody could do it. Like you said, Risk.
No.
Risk did, I think, or I don't remember off the top of my head if it was around the same time. Risk, can't think of Risk came earlier.
Before, yeah. You played that back in 2013.
Yeah, and I liked it a lot. And it's a good game. If you like Risk, you should play that. But it's a lot of games of Risk. And that was the thing that I felt about Pandemic Leagues. I didn't play this. I still haven't played this. I don't care to play this. But again, if someone was like, hey, let's play this, I'm like, sure. Because again, it had a wonderful impact in the industry. It was the number one game on Board Game Geek for quite some time.
Yeah, it's. I don't know that you would necessarily like it because it is Pandemic with legacy elements, and you don't necessarily love Pandemic.
I don't.
If I was going to play one of these with you, I would pick Pandemic Legacy Season Zero.
Oh.
Because it does some really interesting, different things. It's a prequel.
Sure.
To these two. And it's very unique in that way. Gotcha. But yeah, if you don't like the thing, but like other games like Rise of Queensdale came out, yeah. Charterstone came out, Betrayal Legacy.
Oh,
like,
a lot of them. Werewolf.
Like, Werewolf Legacy, yeah, My City,
Machikoro,
Aeon's End Legacy, Machikoro Legacy, yeah, none of these really worked,
no.
Right? Dragonfire, which was like the Shadowrun Crossfire, but with dragons,
yeah.
Like, none of it really worked. I think the only one that's really worked and people love is Clank Legacy,
but Acquisitions they like Incorporated. Clank.
Yeah, they like Clank or they like Acquisitions Incorporated.
Yes, so, that's it.
So, yeah. Pandemic Legacy, it's a weird legacy that it has.
Yeah, and again, it wasn't the strongest of years, but there were very good games out there. Codenames came out that year. Mysterium came out that year. So there was good stuff, but nothing that was epic. And again, there wasn't really any major competitors. 2016 was a very big year for us. I called it. I took my shot. I pointed my shot. We talked about it a lot. We had, if you ever want to hear the most rambunctious episodes, it's around Scythe, especially when it was being kickstarted, because me and Drew went round after round after round about, like, would this be the greatest, you know, non-IP board game on Kickstarter, or would it be, like, the end and would just crash and burn? And we played a lot of this. We anticipated it. We had Jamie Stegmaier on. It was just, it was a big thing for us because we were board gamers. And it was a non-IP thing. It felt like part of our family, right? Because it was like, it was something that outside people would have no knowledge of. It wasn't a Monopoly. It wasn't a Ticket to Ride. It was a real gamer game on Kickstarter. And we followed it. We backed it. I remember we talked about this a lot too. So Scythe, again, not surprising game of the year. Although, what else came out that year? Star Wars Rebellion. So
yeah, oof. Yeah, there was, so this was a weird year for a couple of reasons. Rebellion came out, Star Wars Rebellion, which it was a Star Wars board game that we never thought was going to exist.
I did predict that eventually we would have Death Stars, but that was it.
Yeah,
I was like, I'll have Death Stars one day as an actual model playable in the game. Like, it's never going to happen. It did, but
but they made it happen. It was very expensive reason, but they made it happen. Terraforming Mars also came out that year, but it was almost impossible to get through the end of the year. Like, they didn't actually get that game in print in a reasonable way until, like, March of 2017.
Yeah.
I remember because I brought my copy to every single game night. I brought it to people's houses. I lent it to people. My copy of Terraforming Mars got played, like, 40 times in 2016 because nobody could find a copy of this game. So, Scythe won, I'm not going to say by default, but because it was ubiquitous, it was a Kickstarter, and a lot of the other games were not easy to get or came out late in the year.
Yeah, and I think, and again, this is, we've talked about this a lot, and there's a lot of conversation to still have. I mean, Kickstarter was at, I feel like it was at its height when Scythe came out, at least for us as board gamers. Obviously, there's been games that have made more money since then, but I think as a force of nature, it was at its best moment. And it set off Jamie Stegmaier and Stonemaier Games, and it became its own thing, and it made Kickstarter the place to be for board gamers, and then everything else followed it. And then it obviously had some of its other problematic things afterwards.
It was a much less cynical time.
Yes, and again, what most board gamers, or I guess more publishers, kind of use Kickstarter for is for the marketing.
Yeah.
So as you said, it was a marketing win for Stegmaier and Stonemaier Games.
Right.
2017, again, Kickstarter, I shouldn't say it was probably the height, but it was kind of somewhat, because what carried on was probably one of the biggest board games of all time. We played a demo of this somehow back before it was a thing.
I dragged you to this, and you were like, why did you make me play that terrible
it
game?
Was,
and
I did not like the... Don't say that on air. Like, I think the game is fine. You can look up my rating on Board Game Geek. It's fine. I played 30 some odd rounds of it. I invested 30 some odd plus hours into it. I painted my miniature. I did my time, bro. I did my time.
And what is this game that we are so agitated about?
I mean, the only game that you could play 30 some odd times and not finish it.
Yeah.
It's Gloomhaven. It's Gloomhaven.
Yeah. This was such a weird one. Like, it was a very small Kickstarter, right? Very small. It made $250,000 or whatever.
Yeah.
And it came out early 2017, and it exploded in all the places what mattered. Like, Tom Vassell all of a sudden has put his at number one. Yeah. Cosmic Encounter has been there for 10 years, and he's like, no, now it's Gloomhaven. And then they run another Kickstarter to get more copies out there, and they make millions of dollars. It's funny, though, because in that first year, I don't know how many people actually played Gloomhaven, because there weren't that many copies out in the wild. Like, I want to say maybe 4,000, 3 or 4,000 got printed. It wasn't like this crazy, ridiculous, huge volume of games that kind of hit the market all at once, and people were playing it and got super excited. Like, Scythe was basically that. Like, everybody was playing Scythe, so everybody loved Scythe. Gloomhaven had less than 5,000 backers, so that many people and their friends played it, right, in 2017, and there were some that went to retail. But all those people loved it, yes, is what it was, because it was so different. Whatever you think of it now, you can't argue with the fact that it changed an entire genre of board game, like one of the most popular genres of board game.
Yes.
It changed it completely. And all the games that come out now in that genre are different. They're not dice chuckers anymore. They have more to them because they have to. Otherwise, they're like, well, why would I not just play Gloomhaven? So, Gloomhaven, I think it deserved the win that year. Azul also came out that year, yes, but it was really probably the only other game that was even close.
Yes, but I will say that one of my best game experiences, one of the games I do love, it's in my top 100, 878 Vikings, Invasions of England, which again, I think I rightly made fun of just because it sounds like a phone number. I don't know. Maybe I got 1-800 cards for kids on my head and I can never get it out there. So like 878 Vikings. I'm like, what is that? It's a game. Like, really? Come on. Yeah. Come on. No, but
now, it is a phone number though. There's 10 digits there. You can dial that.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It was also another Kickstarter. And I was like, come on, it's ridiculous. And you're like, no, 878 Vikings. I'm like, all right, I'll call. You know, just never got anything. But okay. There Azul Century Spice Road was on there, Photosynthesis, some really good stuff. 2018. I know this is one of the biggest games. These are all been great games because everyone voted for it who actually plays games. Root.
Yes. Yeah, and this was before I fell in love with Root. So I was like, oh, Root? Root, really? I didn't back the Kickstarter. I picked this game up at Gen Con that year, and before they sold out of it. And I didn't really even play it that year until like the end of the year. And then at that point, I was like, oh, this is actually great, but not enough to realize how great it was until maybe a year or two later. But that wasn't even like the brass reprints came out that year. Mm-hmm. Birmingham, which is now the number one game of all time, or has been at some point. Quacks of Quedlinburg came out that year. So it was a good year.
It was a very good year. Keyforge came out that year.
Yep.
So a lot of great games came out that year. And Root was one of those games when we went to the conventions, Anthony, and was just like, their booth was like, Leader Games booth was sold out. Like, when I mean sold out, I mean like there was like, it was empty. Like they were selling like furniture. They were just like,
yeah,
there was nothing there to buy. Like, you would walk in there and be like, can I buy a thing? And they're like, we have literally nothing to buy. Like, I think they sold out. I don't know if it was that year. I guess obviously the year after. Like, they sold out a day before the convention came to an end. They couldn't get they couldn't get enough stuff out there.
No, it was like Saturday early afternoon, early late morning. You walk by and they had like a stuffy hanging there. Like, that was it. You're like, yeah, you can buy that stuffed animal. That's about it.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then 2019, again, and not a big surprise here. One of the biggest games of all time. And again, it brought non-gamers into gaming in like a super, super big way. I think the biggest way that we've had it forever, Wingspan.
yeah, Wingspan was a no-brainer. This is like, honestly, we had like 5 straight years of no-brainers. None of these were surprising. No. Pandemic, Scythe, Gloomhaven, Root, Wingspan. That's like, that is those 5
That's
years.
Because that's gamers know games, bro.
That's what I'm saying. And Wingspan won almost every award that year. So like, if you look at the list, I don't even know what else came
Watergate
out.
Watergate came out honestly. That year and won.
Watergate was
players.
Good.
Yeah.
Watergate was good.
You know, so again.
I can't believe Watergate came out that year. Like,
well, The Crew came out that year too.
Yeah, yeah. That was a good one.
Yeah. But Wingspan was a phenomenon. Like, I remember when that game came out and like, people were like, oh yeah, you could get a copy of it online for like $200. And you're like, what? And they're like, yeah, it turns out bird watchers are also in this weird Venn diagram of like being this somewhat the same personality type as board gamers, like willing to sit for hours to enjoy the look and the subtleness, complexity of a thing. And you're like, oh, well, yeah. That's great. Never going to see this game in, you know, forever. And Elizabeth Hargrave crushing it.
Yep.
All right. Well, that brings us all the way to 2020, and things changed. And yeah. We were so glad that things changed because, again, everything deserves awards. Games are great, they're amazing, and they're amazing for different people in different ways. This year, 2020, they broke them up to Game of the Year, Light, Medium, and Heavy.
Yes, which you should always do, because then Splendor doesn't win Game of the Year. It wins Light Game of the Year, and you're like, oh, it's just the Light Game of the Year, whatever.
Yes, that's the way it should be. So, Game of the Year Light, Micro Macro Crime City. Imagine this winning Game of the Year. It's
oh my gosh, it's Where's that
Waldo?
Terrible.
It's just Where's Waldo?
I like it. It's fun, but it's not the you can't pick that as Game of the Year because then people look back and are like, that was the
Game
of the
Year? Yeah, somebody comes into the industry like, well, I will buy Game of the Year. And they're like, what is this? It's a giant piece of paper with a really bad magnifying glass that you have to find things on. They're like, Where's Waldo? Like, yeah, but murder?
With a story, but also not appropriate for children?
And not really a story either. It's like, yeah, you know, but I own two versions of this. I guess the first and the second, there's a third coming, or do I own the, no, I think there's a fourth coming out. I think we're on the fourth.
They're on the
fourth. It's one of those games that's brilliant because it's I know I make it sound like weak, like it's obvious, like duh, but like, it's something's come out and you're like, oh damn it, I could have made that.
Yeah,
but
you'd have to draw it though.
No, that would never happen. And again, the drawing is the genius, not the gameplay. The gameplay is, it's a game experience. You just have to find things on a map. But
I feel like this was somebody doodling for a few hundred hours and then being like, I could make a game out of this.
Yes. And again, whoever drew that, and like, again, basically, if you have not played it, again, it's just a mystery and you have to follow clues. And basically what you're doing is you're finding a character and you're following them backwards. But it's like the past, present, and future all on one plane. So it's very cool as far as, so whoever did that, bravo, like great job. But beyond that, it's a game experience. Game of the Year, Medium. Sounds like the Three Bears here. Lost Ruins of Arnak.
Yes.
Now I'm going to argue here. I'm going to argue here with you in a second. Dad, give it some praise, man. Okay. Drop some praise.
Okay.
Drop it.
Lost Ruins of Arnak was, so two games came out at the same time.
Uh-huh.
They had the same mechanics, more or less. Uh-huh. Not exactly the same, but we had worker placement plus deck building. And now we have a bunch of those.
Yes.
And this is the one that like just like pile drive me. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. It's like Indiana Jones, but in a board game. But also there's kind of fantasy elements, so I don't feel quite as gross about it. So I've played this game a million times. I love this game. And the expansions have only made it better. I'm really psyched because next week we're getting another expansion at Gen Con.
Yes.
Definitely picking that up.
Here's my problem with it. Is it Medium?
Yes.
Okay. I feel... All right, let me say this again to you. Is it Medium considering Gloomhaven, Jaws of the Lion, one heavy?
Yeah, that's the one I have a problem with. All right, because On Mars came out that year. On Mars should have won Heavy Game.
It's the first year you're using the term heavy, and you give it the Gloomhaven in the big box store version. Yeah. I think Gloomhaven, Jaws of the Lion, and Lost Ruins of Arnak, if they both needed to be awarded, should have been swapped. I think Lost Ruins of Arnak is a harder game than Gloomhaven, which is a co-op game. It's a lighter. I mean, look, we can look up the numbers. I don't know. We can ask our producer to look up the BGG rating as far as
Crunch. So Jaws of the Lion is a 3.63.
Okay.
And Lost Ruins of Arnak is a 2.90.
See, I don't... I mean, you get crunched in
the game. I agree on Arnak. I don't agree on Jaws of the Lion.
No, that's not a thing. Why would people think that's a thing?
I don't. Honestly, I think most of these adventure type games, like dungeon crawlers, get higher difficulty ratings because of how fiddly they are.
Okay.
It's like people look at that and they're like, it's kind of hard to wrap your head around what you're supposed to do, so it's a heavy game. It's not a heavy game. It's just got a lot of overhead to learn, and once you learn it, it's just like, you move here, you do this, you play this card, fight, 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 fight. I win, move on, do it again.
Yeah, it's wash, rinse, and repeat. Maybe people are playing who don't know games, but like Lost Ruins of Arnak is some pretty innovative, smart, and crunchy deck building along with worker placement and a really challenging track that you fight over. Like, that track is nothing to be messed with. Oh, there's a track. Like, oh, it's, you know, like, no. There's bonuses on the whole thing, and you have to, like, lie, scrimp, and steal and kill giant monsters in order to get the little things that you need. Like, that will hurt your head. So,
yeah,
I don't know. And again, you mentioned, Anthony, like, or again, we should mention also, like, Dune Imperium came out that year, which, again, I think a lot of people in their head was like, Lost Ruins of Arnak or Dune Imperium. It's like Coke versus Pepsi because they felt like they were the same game. I didn't feel that way, but a lot of people did.
Yeah, it was just that one mechanic, I think. Yes. They were very different in other ways because Dune Imperium has combat, right? And it's an IP-based game. And the way the market works is much different than an Arnak, where the cards are almost always useful because of how it's structured, whereas Dune Imperium is obviously a big mess of a market.
Yes.
We don't have to get into all that, but yeah, I agree. I think Onmar should have won heavy. Well, that's it. That's what I would
say. Yes. All right, 2021. Game of the Year, Light, Cascadia.
Yes, brilliant game. Still, happy with that.
Still have not played it. Don't believe it exists.
We'll demo it next week, man. We're gonna.
Don't believe it exists. Game of the Year, Medium, The Crew, Mission Deep Sea.
Yeah, this is weird because it's like, it's not an expansion because it's like a standalone, but it's basically an expansion. It's the same game.
It's the same game that lost a previous award, so it's kind of weird that
It's a there's other stuff that came out that would have been more interesting,
and it's a better version. But I think it's also BGG. This is their one big problem. It's like, they don't know what to do with games that are like re-implementations of the same game or just like slightly revised. They're like, it gets the same, it gets its own page. I'm like, it really does it. Like TI4, TI3, 2-1. Like when it comes to the award, it's relatively the same game. Please don't come at me. Like, I get it. There's differences.
Nah, you're right, though.
It's just, it's problematic on a list / award system thing. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. On the, you know, again, on the heavy side, Ark Nova.
I mean, this was a no-brainer. Yep. If they'd only had one game of the year, this would have been it.
That's funny. That's true. I get that. Yeah, so 2022, which is the current year in which they are awarded. Light year. Light game. Cat in the Box Deluxe Edition. I still don't know why they call it Deluxe Edition, but okay.
I don't. I mean, it's because it came out in Japan originally, and it was not
deluxe
at all. It was barely above print and play. Okay. I played the original Japanese version. It was very, very bland. It's a great game. I think honestly 2022 is like a weirdly off year.
There was not
a lot of great stuff.
Very thin.
Cat in the Box is great, but it wasn't like mind blowing.
Yes. And I think maybe there was some outcome of the COVID situation. Like people weren't designing around the earlier years or something.
Maybe.
The medium game, Anthony, Heat, Pedal to the Metal.
Heard a lot of great things about this. I feel like, again, if there was one game of the year, probably it would have been this one.
And then game of the year, the heavy, Carnegie.
I'm in with that. I think it was the best heavy
game. I know we did our awards too, and it was like, there was very, I think on the heavy, on all the games, it was thin. And I think it's a COVID situation. Yeah. But on certainly on the heaviest side, I think they got hit the hardest, and I think Carnegie was the best of what was available. I do want to point out, because it's a little bit of an oddity, the best Zoomable game for 2020 was Forgotten Waters, and then nothing else since then, because we are not doing that anymore.
This is a one-time award. It's like somebody at Board Game Geek's like, oh, Forgotten Waters is really good and no one's gonna play it because it came out in the middle of COVID. So
they're like, let's do a thing, and then let's never do that again, because you could still zoomable games, but nobody really wants to do that.
Yeah.
To be fair, we tried it. It's not the best. So no. All right. Well, there you go. The last 10 great years of game, as voted by everyone out there. Great job. All of these games are alive and kicking. The current award's a little bit more or less, but again, we love the idea that there's light, medium, heavy. Some great games get to the table. Cheer them on as they move on. And again, definitely get on to BGG. If you're not on BGG, you should be, because you love this stuff. And again, vote for those great games out there. We'll see you there on Board Game Geek. Until next time, this is Chris.
Hey, and this is Anthony.
We'll save you all a seat at the table. Take care, everyone.
Bye.
Yeah.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.